Welcome to this AAT podcast. Today, I'm going to cover some aspects of partial exemption, looking at how the 2009 changes have settled in, and highlighting in particular a couple of issues for partly exempt businesses dealing internationally. The first major change in 2009 was the change to the basis of calculation method for the first year of trading or becoming partly exempt. Prior to 2009, you either had to use the standard method, using income as a recovery basis, or negotiate a special method. Now, special methods are great for some businesses, but you need very good data to go on before you can determine what method is best for you. Clearly, if you are only just starting out in business, or you have only just become partly exempt, you have no actual trading data upon which to base calculations. As such, any special method proposed at the beginning can only be done so on best estimate, which of course may not be very reliable. The 2009 change was to allow a use-based method in that first year, whilst the trade developed, to a stage where sensible calculations could be done. For example, consider a business that I looked at recently. It provided financial research data to a variety of clients, being paid a fee for the provision of the information. This was all standard rated, and so it benefited from full input tax recovery. It then realised that it could make more money by executing stock trades for clients as well as simply providing them with the advice. It therefore started an agency trading operation as well, buying and selling shares for clients. Of course, this was an exempt activity, which meant that it was going to create an input tax restriction. The question was whether a special method would be best from the beginning. With no actual trading data available, it was impossible to accurately model how a special method would impact VAT recovery. We had some projections, but these were merely that, and their reliability was therefore difficult to assess. What we were able to do using the new provisions was to trade for the first 9 months using the income-based method, and then assess special methods using actual trading data. This gave us a much more accurate model, and we were able to then put in place a much better special method at the end of the year, increasing VAT recovery significantly. Remember that one of the great attractions of this new method is that you can adopt the use-based approach retrospectively if that suits better. This means that an income-based calculation carried out throughout the year might not give the best result, but it allows for later adjustment. If you opt for the use-based apportionment from the beginning, you are required to stick with it for the first year. And of course, this could prove to be a disaster. The second significant change was to allow a prior year percentage to be used on a provisional basis throughout the following year, with no special method being in place. This can simplify returns substantially, but care does need to be taken. If we think of my client that we've just discussed for a moment, we can see that as the agency trading increases, so does the exempt proportion of its income. As a result of this, its input tax recovery rate decreases with time. If the clients used the prior year provisional basis of calculation, it would be recovering more than was strictly due. Clearly, this isn't a problem as long as the client knows what's going on and what the trends are doing. However, if this was not noticed during the year, there could be a very nasty surprise when the annual adjustment was carried out at the end of the year and the overclaim was discovered. So using a prior year percentage is not always a good idea. All we need to do is to ensure that our clients and our businesses are aware of the consequences of their actions before they act. The final important change for businesses with non-UK income was to allow this income to be incorporated into partial exemption methods without the need for a separate apportionment calculation. The majority of this income would be taxable if it were made in the UK, and so it gives rise to the same input tax recovery rights in the UK as ordinary UK taxable income. However, due to the place of supply rules, most of this income is strictly outside the scope of VAT, and so could not be included in ordinary partial exemption calculations. What this meant was that a business with both non-UK and UK mixed taxable and exempt income had to do was to carry out two calculations. The first calculation identified VAT incurred, which related to the non-UK sourced income. The second calculation looked at the UK income, splitting between taxable and exempt income. This other change allowed those businesses to carry out only one calculation. The ability to include it seems to have been welcomed by businesses, and most of the ones eligible to take advantage of it appear to have done so. This certainly simplifies calculations and can save time and money. The only real downside which we need to be aware of is the loss of the de minimis limit. A pure partial exemption calculation gives full VAT recovery, where exempt input tax is less than £625 per month on average, and also is less than 50% of total input tax incurred. The business with a relatively low level of exempt activity thus gains recovery of all of its input tax. If the same business includes non-UK income in the calculation, the de minimis limit is no longer available, and so any identifiable exempt input tax is then lost to the business. It can therefore be better to do two calculations, and therefore retain full recovery in certain circumstances. Again, as long as the business knows what the effect of including the income will be before it does so, all is well. One final and relatively minor change that completed the package in 2009 was the introduction of the ability to anticipate the annual adjustment if that worked in your favour. Historically, any annual adjustment was carried out and inserted in the VAT return workings for the period following the VAT year. So a business with a 31st of March year end included the annual adjustment on the VAT return ending on the 30th of June. Now, not surprisingly, about half of all adjustments resulted in a repayment being due to the business. But the business was required to wait before being able to claim it, even though the adjustment period had already ended. Now, those businesses with an annual adjustment showing a repayment can claim that repayment on the final return of the VAT year. In our example, the VAT return ending on the 31st of March. This facility is most welcome and has been used by several of my clients where a payment has been due to them. Of course, those clients where a payment is due to HMRC leave the adjustment until the following quarter. I thought it would be useful to review these changes now to see how they're bedding in, and it would seem that overall, the new treatments have been well received and are functioning effectively. The other reason for talking about partial exemption was to highlight a couple of issues which have crossed my desk over the last few months. They all relate to the impact of the reverse charge. The changes to the place of supply rules from the 1st of January 2010 meant that many more services were now included in the basic rule. This means that a UK business purchasing virtually any service from a supplier outside of the UK becomes liable to account for the VAT themselves on their own VAT return. Of course, for a business which supplies taxable goods and services itself, there is no real impact here. There is some administration to do and a calculation to do, but there is no payment or repayment to be affected. For these businesses, the notional output tax, calculated and reported and paid over in box 1 of the VAT return, is matched by a corresponding figure in box 4 of the same return. Of course, a real cost arises for those partly exempt businesses. The business still calculates the output tax and pays it over in box 1, but it cannot recover all of the VAT in box 4. Some businesses, of course, can recover virtually none of it. This gives rise to a real VAT cost. Some businesses seem to think that this isn't really fair, but of course all it really does is put the business back in the same position it would have been had it bought the service in the UK in the first place. Recently, I've come across three businesses, all partly exempt, which have run into difficulties through misunderstanding of the reverse charge rules. The first business was a UK subsidiary of a US corporation. It dealt in stocks and shares and had a very low recovery rate. It paid a management charge to the US holding company each year and did not account for VAT using the reverse charge. It did account for VAT using the reverse charge for other overseas costs, but did not include the management charge. This was fine, and it had successfully challenged HMRC's attack on the treatment about 3 years ago. They successfully argued that pure management fees did not fall within the old Schedule 5 provisions and so were outside the scope of the reverse charge system. Unfortunately, what it had neglected to do was to keep up to date and implement the place of supply changes from 2010. HMRC came to visit again last year. They looked into this area as it had been an area of dispute in the past. Sadly, there was nothing that could be done about this issue. The changes from 1st of January 2010 brought management charges and a lot of other services into the reverse charge provisions. For the future, we can look at doing things differently. Currently, we are looking at restructuring the way the US corporation extracts profits from the UK company, looking at perhaps dividends rather than fees and management charges. If we go down this route, then the VAT issue will disappear. Of course, there are other tax issues which need to be considered as well. That was a business that understood the reverse charge concept, but unfortunately had not kept up to date with the changes at all and therefore fell foul of the provisions. The second business I dealt with recently was one which simply failed to understand that the reverse charge was an issue at all. It was a casino business, registered for VAT due to taxable supplies through its bars and catering functions, but partly exempt because of its gaming income. It had several overseas suppliers, ranging from IT support and website hosting through to advertising and marketing. It simply entered these costs into its records as costs and ignored the VAT consequences. An officer from HMRC identified this on a visit and again raised an assessment to collect the underpaid tax. Unfortunately, there was little we could do here either, as this was down to pure ignorance. The third and final case was in fact very similar to the second, but the distinction here was that the company wasn't actually VAT registered at all. So the reason this was picked up was not to do with a visit from HMRC. The company hadn't registered for VAT because all of its income, it felt, was exempt from VAT. Because VAT registration is only required when you have taxable activity, the company wasn't registered. What it had failed to recognise was that the treatment of purchases of services from outside of the UK impacts on registration as well as VAT calculation once you are registered. The legislation requires the business to act in all ways as if it had made the supply itself in the UK. So the purchase of a service from overseas is treated as if it were a UK sale. If the value of those services purchased exceeds the registration limit, the business has thus exceeded the registration limit, even though it has no traditional UK taxable activity. So if it wasn't picked up by a VAT officer visiting, how did it come to light? It came to light only when the business changed accountants and is now actually looked after by a firm with which I work. It wasn't the greatest of starts for the new accountant to have to break the news that there was a significant VAT liability going back over 4 years. However, the client was grateful for the knowledge and at least by disclosing the error reduced his penalties. Also, it confirmed to him that he was right to make the change, as clearly his previous accountant had not been providing full advice. What this can do for us, of course, is to highlight an issue for all of us as advisors. We need to ensure that we are constantly thinking about our clients all the time and check any changes in legislation and practice and alert those clients who might be affected by it. Speaking of changes coming up, there is one thing that's actually nothing to do with partial exemption, but I'd like to mention here because it could impact some businesses from next year. The third case, which we've just outlined, related to a business which wasn't registered for VAT as it didn't think it needed to register. In that case, it was due to a misunderstanding of the reverse charge rules. The change from next year, from the 1st of August, in fact, 2012, is one which HMRC have announced, but very surreptitiously, and which a lot of businesses have simply not noticed. It relates only to non-UK businesses, that is, those businesses without a UK place of business or establishment. At present, all businesses can benefit from not having to register if the value of their supplies stays below the registration limit of £73,000. This registration limit has been with us for many years and will be retained at least for UK businesses, presumably increasing to reflect inflation. The change from August next year is that a business which is not established in the UK, but which trades here, will have an immediate obligation to register for VAT as soon as they commence trading. The registration limit for non-UK-based businesses will be zero. Of course, there are many overseas businesses which are operating in the UK and which are not registered for VAT because of the low value of their taxable supplies. These businesses will need to be registered from next August. Similarly, any new businesses starting to trade in the UK will have a UK VAT registration obligation immediately. This highlights just a simple fact again, that we need to be aware of all of the changes that are coming through and ensure that any clients who might be affected by them are alerted to the situation. Thank you for listening to this AAT podcast.